Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. I want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
Here's the pitch by Downing. Swinging. There's the drive into left center field. That ball is going to be out of here. It's gone. It's 7-15. There's a new home run champion of all time, and it's Henry Aaron.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
Dirt to Kukoc. Tony on the move, to the bucket, no, the tip Rodman, no, the tip Jordan, no, and the ball game is over. The Charlotte Hornets have defeated the Chicago Bulls, snapping a 44-game winning streak by the Bulls.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
There it is, as grand as it gets.
Perfect speed, perfect line.
The Tiger has his slam.
Something I never dreamt that I would ever see.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
City. Time for Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader, 1080 The Fan. Brandon Sprague, Andy Dirt Johnson in with you on this happy, beautiful hump day.
Hump day!
All of our listeners have their tickets ready.
Their tickets?
Yeah, their tickets. Did everybody buy their tickets for the show today?
What?
Tickets to the gun show.
You're
sorry,
stupid.
That was a really bad dad joke. I apologize. Yeah. We're both wearing cutoff t-shirts today. Looks like we're cycling on the same path again.
This happened, yeah. I think, like 15 times since we've done a show. Is we'll wear the same shirt, the same color.
I hear Sprague walk into the building and he's walking down the hallway and we're the only like four people in here. And I just hear from about 25 feet away, oh God, are you kidding me? I'm like, what? What's wrong? Turn around. Hey, nice. You're wearing cutoff too.
Well, I'm exercising right after the show. So I thought, why do I even need to wear regular clothes? There's nobody at work anyway. No. I'm going to wear what I'm going to run in.
It's going to be 70 degrees.
I mean, I'm wearing like Under Armour fitted, sleeveless tank top workout shirt with shorts. I think it's pretty safe. I come in and, oh, the jackass across from me is wearing the exact same outfit.
Yeah, I worked out this morning and then I ran out of time. I was like, I guess I got to go to work now. I'm not going to change or shower. I'm just going to wander on into work in my cutoff t-shirt.
This might tip me over the edge. And I was hanging in there with lockdown.
Did you buy your ticket to the gun show today, Swagger?
No, I'm looking for a refund.
Coming in guns a-blazing today, baby.
It's the gun show.
Welcome in. We're going to change the name of the show. The gun show with the tromboners. Happy Wednesday.
A little too much mayonnaise for me on a Wednesday.
Too much mayonnaise.
Yeah, I got to work on the old farmer's tan. The upper arm has not seen much sun here as of late.
I don't care how white I am. I was born this way. What do you want me to do about it?
Pale. What do you want from me?
Glock 9. And the 22 are in with you today.
That's what we're going with. I can't go bazooka.
You could go bazooka.
All right, I like
if you
that.
Feel your arms, if you had to describe your arms in a gun.
Yeah, probably not a bazooka. That's a little over. That's a little extreme.
I might go BB gun.
I'm going to be honest with you.
Airsoft guns.
Airsoft guns.
Airsoft guns, yeah.
I don't know a lot of guns, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm about at the end of mine. Shotgun, rifle. I mean, I know a lot. There's a lot of different variations of these, but. That's basically how I view guns. Oh, it's a shotgun. Cool.
All right. Yeah, shotgun. I'm going to go shotgun. It's got a good spread. It can hit a lot.
Is there anything? I do this to people sometimes, and I realize it mid-conversation. There's nothing worse than the person who goes into detail about a topic that the other person knows nothing about.
You have no clue. You just have to do the smile and nod your head yes, like you understand or you think you understand.
The two areas most in my life where I think this would apply would be in the auto category.
Sure, when people start talking cars with you.
Yeah. And guns. It's you'd start talking about this stuff and you could say almost anything and I'm going to assume you're right and you know what you're talking about and I'm not going to question it, nor am I even going to bother to look it up to verify if you were talking correctly about those things.
Yeah, I'm just going to take your word for it. I do that with the truck all the time. Once I bought it, people would ask me about certain features that are in it and I would just say, yeah.
Dual exhaust?
Does it have a blah, 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 blah? Yeah, dude, duh. Got a new truck. Of course it does.
You got a cap on your main shaft?
You're damn right. Who doesn't cap their main shaft, man?
Exactly.
You can't drive around without a cap on your main shaft.
Chew it and do it.
That's right. That's right.
I had a buddy. He cleared out. He had a gun. He had two gun safes, and they were just packed. I mean, with, you know, handguns, rifles. And I went over there one day and he was showing me, it's a pretty cool collection. Some older guys, this is from like 1910. And, you know, it was cool in that sense.
Right.
And he was talking about these things and I didn't know any. I just kept,
just flying right over your head.
Oh, man, that's cool.
Yeah.
Oh, where'd you get it?
Yeah, and in those moments, too.
Does it still work? Like, that's right, basically what my end of that conversation sounded and looked like.
Yeah, I am. I'm not willing to, in those moments, to acknowledge my shortcomings. I don't like being that guy. I like pretending like I know what I'm doing for the most part.
And really?
I like going along with it. I don't want to point out my stupidity. People will do that even with, like, movies or TV shows. Like, our boss will do that sometimes. He'll point to, like, a random reference from the 1970s. Like, oh, do you remember blah, blah, blah? I'm like, yeah. Oh, yeah, it was funny.
Yeah, I
never
know.
Instead of just being like, no, I don't remember that at all. I have no clue what you're talking about right now.
Well, because if you do that, you're basically killing the conversation. Right.
And then you're opening up a whole new box of, do I get like an explanation of what you were saying or do I just move on from the joke?
Well, and if there's anything I've learned being a part of the male species, it's this is how we communicate. This is how we share our feelings. This is how we just converse for an odd amount of time, an hour and a half to 2 hours. Right. I've been in a garage several times, both as a child and as an adult, where people are huddled around somebody's engine. The hood is up. There's a light in there.
Yeah, they're looking at it.
And they're looking at it like, yeah, it looks like a broken gas cat mutter. Yeah, I think it actually might be the dual intake. And there's like 3-4 people just spouting off opinions, of which I'm not even sure if they all know. And I'm always just sitting there fascinated. I'm like, how do you know all? What class did you take
when
that I missed?
When did you learn all of this?
Hell, I didn't even know how to properly wash my hands after doing something on my car until somebody showed me a mechanic soap.
Right. Somebody said, I tell people I know nothing about cars. I get my man card from sports. And another one said, now you know what it's like for those of us that don't know a lot about sports. There's probably some that are out there that are that way as well. Like if you started rattling through baseball player names or football teams that have won, that kind of stuff, that would just look at you and be like, and have no clue what you're talking about.
Yeah, but yeah, even to sports to some varying degree, because we talk about it every day with each other for 4 hours, pre-show and show, I would say, and we've admitted this before, largely there's a time where I get off work, not really interested in talking about sports as much, right? But if I am stuck in a conversation where if I'm in a conversation with a bunch of my friends and they're sharing their sports opinions, I do sit there quietly.
You just listen and observe.
And I'm always fascinated of why they have blank opinion or why they think blank player is the difference between a championship and no championship.
Right.
And mostly I don't correct people. If your opinion is your opinion, great. I can disagree with it. But largely in a group setting of conversation, much like with car stuff or gun stuff, I don't really say much because I do for 3 hours. Like I gave my opinion. If you want to hear it, you could check the podcast out. But you get a lot of people who don't know all that much, but they think they do. And then you hear what they say about that too. And you're like,
that's what you think, huh?
Okay.
That's where you're coming from. Somebody said, you guys are destroying any shed of masculinity people perceive that you have. I have no shame in admitting that. Like if you
cars
had
and guns are masculinity, then you need to re-identify your masculinity.
If you had a masculinity scale of like hunting and guns and cars and knowing how to do household things, like fix stuff around the house, like, if you had a scale of a 0 to 100, I'm probably at a 7. in terms of those things. You know, I can chop wood. I can make a fire. I got that going for me.
Defining being a man within those two realms.
In that realm right there. If that's the realm that you're looking at, I'm at the bottom of the barrel.
That's kind of where I'm at, yeah, too. I 7, 10. I'll give myself a 10. I have executed basic functioning repair things around my house and within my car.
Yeah, a lot of duct tape.
Hey, I've done a tail light.
Done tail light before?
Hey, I redid my floor at my house.
That's true. I have done a floor.
You know, like those things, sure. You give me credit for that. I'll put myself at a 10 out of 100. But if we're defining how true of a man you are by guns and cars, well, I think this goes to the validity of the conversation we're currently having.
That's all we got right now, man. That's all we got going for us.
You define it by this.
That's it.
Change my mind on this.
Can you fix a carburetor? No?
I had a friend send me a text on this. Non-essential people are actually the root of our traffic jam problems. Change my mind.
Yeah, I mean, you can't there, Bob, because traffic is flowing with ease.
Traffic seems to be going A-okay.
Yeah, we still do our traffic reports, and I crack up every time they come across a commercial break. Yeah,
is there not any different?
It's flowing great on I-5 North, I-5 South. There's no cars. 26, there's clear all the way out to the beach, and
I'm Glenn Nerd in Phoenix with your traffic report.
Oh, okay, look at that. Nobody out on the road. All right, that's not a bad theory. I can't change your mind on that one.
You could tell me it's out of sheer numbers, but
there's still a lot of people driving.
Yeah.
Still a lot of people out there. It's all those non-essential folk.
All right, well, we got a good show on this Wednesday. Let's find out what's on tap.
Nerd and Sprague know what's brewing.
I'm not paid to be bold. I'm paid to be right.
There's a lot of sporting events that you say, oh, I got to go do that.
This is What's on Tap, poured by Pelican Brewing Company, born at the beach on 1080. The Fan.
All right, quarantine confession. I got to be honest, I'm still a little surprised Swag's being a clock Nazi. Nobody's here. Our breaks are like 60 seconds long. Why are you still so concerned with the clock?
Well, they vary. And if I don't get in your ear at the normal time, you will go 10 minutes past a break.
Oh, that's 100%.
That's 100% true.
No way.
I guarantee it.
Okay. Then
don't
try
say
it
anything
for the
at 1 o'clock.
Try it for the show.
Don't say one
now
thing.
Now that it's in your head.
Do it tomorrow. Do it on a day you want to pick. I challenge you.
I do. I accept that challenge.
We have plenty of great days when you're not producing on the clock. We had a couple segments we go over.
I don't think you realize how much you guys go over.
I would say the least of the three shows.
Well, that's because of me.
Strongly,
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I would almost make the argument you actually cause us to go more over because we're so stubborn that we then dig our heels in.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's your own selfishness is what you're saying.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, to a certain extent.
Yeah.
So it's your character flaw.
A character flaw. I mean, you have a good conversation. I don't know why you need to cut it off. Just a very interesting observation during quarantine I've been making. We got a good show today. We'll have them in 12-minute exact increments.
Not going over the clock once.
And then we'll come back, and then we'll go from 12 minutes to then 16 minutes. And then when we break on that one on time, we'll have 22 minutes. And then the clock becomes kind of useless at that point.
We're going to have a 20-minute segment at the end of every hour today.
Let's do it.
Let's go.
Hey, Dirt and I have seriously suggested just eliminating commercials or summing them up into one break.
Yeah, putting them all like the bottom or top of the hour.
I'd rather talk for 45 minutes straight
one
than break.
One long break at one point in the hour instead of separating them up.
Well, speaking of long conversations. Tom Brady was on Howard Stern this morning.
I'm a little disappointed that I missed this because we had talked about it last week and I totally forgot that it was happening today.
It was amazing.
Because he doesn't do interviews of that kind very often.
It wasn't stuff necessarily that you hadn't known before, but it was just, it's a conversation you just don't hear. And I'll admit this as a radio host, kind of made me contemplate canceling doing interviews ever again in my life.
He's the best there is.
He is easily the best. It's not even a conversation to me. And what we do in sports radio, I think, is very flawed. And that's part of the conversation I want to have today. So it won't just be about Tom Brady being on Howard Stern. We'll get to that. We've got Statter Story, college football coaches not learning lessons. I don't think we're going to have a stop on the Daily Ticker. I had a guest back out because he had a last-minute duty.
A free balling on a Wednesday.
Our sports question of the day, which piece of sports memorabilia would you want to own the most? If you could pick one item in sports history, what do you wish it would be?
Unlimited budget.
The reason for this is because something of Lou Gehrig's was recently purchased, so we'll get to that. We got our Blazer bracket to start today, our poll question, and our voting for those are up at Dirt and Sprague and at 1080 The Fan. That's what's on tap, and it's brought to you in The Fan by Pelican Brewing Company, born at the beach, online at pelicanbrewing.com. We're going to start in college football. College football coaches still not learning. Still not learning. We'll start there. Dirt and Sprague with you on 1080 The Fan. Well, welcome back in. College football coaches not learning, or maybe they will. You've got two coaches who have been in the headlines as of late. Mike Leach was the first. He tweeted a while back. He's been on quarantine like everybody else.
He always tweets out different memes. That's kind of his thing on Twitter.
Memes or videos or something of, you know, Bigfoot.
Trying to get people laughing.
He tweeted a while ago, basically every wife knitting something for their husband after being on quarantine. And it was a picture of an older lady making a noose out of yarn. And it basically said, you know, every wife wants to kill their husband. They're done with this.
We're all stuck in quarantine, and she wants to hang her husband.
This eventually led to the transfer of one of his defensive linemen, whose father basically came out and said he will not stand for a coach who will say or do whatever in that regard. They took it personal, African-American player. And so he is in the transfer portal. Mississippi State responded to this by putting or advising Mike Leach to not only learn about some African-American history. He also was visiting a civil rights museum. Mm-hmm. He has since deleted that tweet, and he sent out a statement on his own Twitter account and said, I sincerely regret if my choice of images in my tweets were found offensive. I had no intention of offending anybody. The other one is Mike Gundy at Oklahoma State. And yesterday, I think we alluded to it, but we didn't dive into it. He suggested that all these kids should come back and play football because they're 18 to 22 and they're too healthy for this to impact them, and the state of Oklahoma needs money coming in. Yeah. To which Oklahoma State, funny or not, came out and went completely against that thought and said, we will be listening to the experts on this. We take it very seriously.
Mike Gundy does not make the rules here.
And Mike Gundy makes a lot of money and has been a part of this program for a long time, but we're going to do what we think is in the best interest of the student-athletes and not Mike Gundy and other people being upset about money.
On a positive coaching note, you do have Nick Saban, who now knows how to use email. So that happened because he apparently didn't know how to use email before this took place, and his wife said she was going to stop answering his emails, and he had to do it. So he's learned that on quarantine. The Gundy one, look, it is stupid. This is Mike Gundy, though, in a nutshell. He's kind of been this guy his entire career. The only thing that I'll say in defense of his comments, and the only thing that I can come up with, is we've talked about this on the show. When you're not immediately impacted by things, it's very hard to understand the realities of it. And if you don't have a lot of cases around you, if you don't have a lot of death around you, if you don't know a lot of people that have been affected by it, and all of you, you're just kind of reading random news stories, but you're not following it super closely.
He dabbles into some very bad news network.
He does. There's no doubt about it. But the point I'm trying to make is the cases right now, I think there's only been one death in Oklahoma from somebody 18 to 35. So that's where he's coming from. And the number of cases in the county that Oklahoma State is in is very low. It's a very minimal number. Now, testing, there's a lot of different questions that come with that, but the number of known cases is very low. So that's the only argument that I can make for Mike Gundy, is that he's looking at it saying, we don't have that many cases. Let's get back. Let's play football. The choice of words of we need to make money and these guys need to make money, all that kind of stuff, that was just foolish. The Mike Leach one, at some point, this is going to bite him in the ass. I don't know when, but he's gotten in trouble for things like this before. If you remember last year, we talked about it. He tweeted out a doctored video. I think it was Obama, but somebody had spliced together words from the speech to make it sound different. And he tweeted it out and said, oh, my God, how could this be real? And everybody said, this is a fake doctored video. And he ran with it and argued back and forth with people on Twitter. It was a bad look, no matter your political leanings.
I think he cost the university. They did a study on that. He cost them like a couple mil, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, there were some people that backed out for sponsorships and stuff. Like, people weren't happy about it. It just was a bad look because it was a doctored video. No matter your leanings, that's fine. But you don't come up with something fake to make that argument. And then you have to be smarter than tweeting out a noose in Mississippi, man.
Yeah.
Really, like, yeah, dude, he's funny on Twitter. The memes, the pictures, they're all good. And it's kind of a fun twist of what not many coaches do that. But you're in Mississippi, dude.
I find coaches kind of useless for Twitter.
For the most part, they are. Well, you don't get anything from
them. What value, I mean, outside of being able to communicate directly with recruits, what value do coaches get from being on Twitter? And, yeah, and the ones who don't get in trouble, which, by the way, kudos to those coaches that can do this without stepping over lines or upsetting everybody on the internet.
I just see Jonathan Smith tweet when they get a recruit, and Cristobal just sends out, like, all caps.
Beautiful day in Austin.
Right, that's all he's got.
But, like, what do you get out of that as a coach? You get nothing. You get maybe 55 retweets, 200 likes. Nobody talks about it. It doesn't move your program in any direction, good or bad. Again, I give both those coaches locally a lot of credit for, they don't really step at it. They stick to just football, mm-hmm. just their program. And then even any ideas or thoughts in terms of when the season will or will not happen, I'm pretty confident to say they share that internally. They don't go public with it. I didn't understand. Mike Gundy can watch any channel he so pleases. But if you're going to watch certain networks that turn this into propaganda and try to divide things and make this not real, that's kind of a you problem. Mm-hmm. You're a grown ass man. You're a man. You're 50. You have to make your own decisions of what you are or not paying attention to.
Is he 50 now?
He's over 50.
Is he really?
I think he's like 52.
That 40 video was over 10 years ago? Was that long ago?
A decade ago, man.
Wow, that was a long time ago.
Look up his age. Let's verify this. But okay, my point is, if you're going to misinform yourself,
he's 52.
Fine. Great. Do that. But why would you not have this conversation internally with your reps at Oklahoma State? Hey, can we get these kids back? I don't think this is a big deal. This is not, right, you know, right. What I mean? Even if you have a conversation that seems stupid to a lot of people that are reading on this, that's fine. But at least it would be with your superiors or your own peers at the university. And they can say, Mike, contrary to what you may have read or heard, this is a very serious thing. We're going to wait. It's better for us long term to do that. And then guess what? The conversation's done. You don't go on a conference call and just publicly go, yeah, I think these players should come back and play. I think they get sick. Who cares? Like, that's a terrible look.
Yeah, he's saying they're young and they're healthy, so who cares if they end up getting sick?
Some can make an argument. Yeah. You should lose your job for that. You're taking kids and you're putting them in a vulnerable situation. You're exposing them to something. And he might be right. Most of them would probably be okay based on what we've heard or read about so far. This still doesn't mean you should be giving it to them.
No, and I have no problem with people to try and be optimistic about timelines. We've talked about that many times on the show. And if you want to say, hey, I would love to be in a state where we can get our players back around in May and start working out again because I'm hoping that the virus is going to be subsided by then. Like, that's a much different thing than saying I want to bring my team back on May 1st and I don't care if they get sick because they're young and they're healthy. It's paraphrasing. He didn't say he didn't care if he gets sick, but he said that they should be able to survive it. That's a bigger issue here, though, is that younger people can have it and not be as affected as older people, but then you spread it around and older people in your life that you run into, they end up getting it. They might be more at risk. Like, that's the whole issue here. And I think his comments kind of are a microcosm of what we're going to go through as a country now in the coming weeks and month is some of the numbers are starting to look a little more encouraging and some of the flattening of the curve terms that you want to use. And it feels like the social distancing is working. But the problem is you have to maintain it, that there can be a sense of, all right, we've social distanced now for this. We're going on like almost a month. Everybody's doing their part, and the numbers are starting to look better. Maybe the death tolls won't be as bad as originally predicted. We're coming out of this, but you're going to want to immediately go back into normalcy, and that isn't the best thing long-term for keeping this at bay. You want to make sure to social distance as long as you can so you don't have more flare-ups of the virus.
Yeah, I would actually, too, on Leach, I would say Twitter is more likely than not going to be an undoing of some sort.
I mean,
when you have to go back and delete a tweet and apologize for the tweet and then go and educate yourself on certain matters in a state that's pretty prevalent, and tied to racism, yeah, I'd say at some point you're probably going to make another mistake, whether you mean to or not. I mean, just like that doctored video a year ago, he thought he was just up at 2 a.m. by himself watching something that kind of spoke to more his political leaning. Right. He shared it and then refuted that it was fake or doctored, and then somebody actually had to inform him that mattered. Hey, that's a fake video.
Not real, Bob.
And you've cost us money now from people backing out and donating to the program.
Yeah, this was a bad look. He was lucky only one player transferred, and the dad I totally get where they're coming from, man. And hopefully he takes the history lessons that he's going to get from what Mississippi has been through in the past seriously, because you don't want to make that mistake again.
Yeah, so Mike Leach and Mike Gundy both stepping in it a bit in college football. My personal opinion, I don't see any value for a head coach to be on Twitter. People like Nick Saban, I don't blame them. Yeah, I get it.
Stay off it.
21st century, so you don't want to come off as the old curmudgeon, but here you are. I want to stay in college football because we have a report back on a potential expansion of the playoff and what the numbers say. And we'll go there next. I wonder and I hope.
What keeps you up at night?
That, well, not this, but I hope coaches like Leach and Gundy, and maybe it's a lost cause. They're in their own world and they make a ton of money and they get rewarded for winning 8 to 10 football games.
Yeah, they're both great football coaches.
But I would also hope in these moments where you get a little egg on your face and you look stupid and you get raked through the coals over it, you'd learn a lesson.
Right.
Now, Leach, I know he had a kid transfer over it. I'm not defending him at all. I saw that tweet and I remember going, not a good time. Never a good time to be doing that.
Right.
And he honestly did not understand why that offended people. And it doesn't have to offend everybody. Not everybody's going to have the same reaction to something like that. But him and Gundy, like, just coming out and Gundy downplaying it, it's irresponsible, especially when you're talking about how much money those dudes make.
Yeah, the Gundy one is more irresponsible in the sense of he is advocating for putting kids in harm's way. Like that, the Leach one is just an insensitive, not understanding the history. I think this is a funny meme, so I'm going to tweet it out. That's kind of what he does.
And I don't even know if that's fair to categorize, because he's such a smart, we know he's a smart dude.
Right, right.
So to act like he didn't know that sending...
I just didn't connect the dots or didn't think about it. Maybe he had too many cocktails that night. I don't know what he's doing in quarantine.
He's a late night tweeter.
But the Gundy one is you're advocating putting kids in harm's way. These aren't professional athletes that are earning a salary. It's one thing for Major League Baseball to, kind of spitball these ideas. Should we bring guys back? Can we put them in quarantine? Can we test them? These are professional athletes that are making a salary. You're talking about student athletes that are going... which should be at least first and foremost students, and they got to wait for the university to open back up. So it's a whole different thing in my book. And it's okay. Like the some of the quotes, like Dabo Swinney coming out and having the like rah-rah, we storm the beaches of Normandy, we're going to have a football season next year.
He said we're going to pack those stadiums
in
August.
The stadium, we storm Normandy, we can get through this. Like you can kind of chuckle at that, but that's just a rah-rah patriotic. Like, all right, hey, look at that. He's being optimistic about what next football season's going to look like. And if Gundy had a quote along those lines, it's not a big issue. Like, hey, we've landed a man on the moon. We can figure this out in the next couple of months. I want my kids back, and I hope they're back in the program. Like, there's no problem with that. But when you're saying, let's bring them back on May 1st, no biggie.
I don't care if they get it. They're 18 to 22.
We need to start making some money. Like, that's where you lose some people.
Yeah, sometimes in moments like these two, I think it kind of it separates and identifies leadership. And if it's a Mike Gundy or a Mike Leach or the governor of Georgia who came out, late mid last week and said, I didn't know people who were not showing any signs could still spread it. Bro, like the CDC is 10 miles from your governor mansion.
Yeah, it's right there in Georgia.
And then he admitted that and then opened up beaches.
Yeah, right.
Like. Shouldn't we be having a conversation? Like, should that guy really be in charge if he doesn't know anything?
No, if you come out with a comment like that when that's been widespread knowledge for months and you're putting the citizens in your state at risk, no, you shouldn't still be in
office. So it's those kinds of things keep me up at night. It's more like I just do not want to be in a situation where those kind of people are in power.
Yeah.
That bothers me.
Yeah.
When you can't accept what a doctor or scientist are saying on stuff, you ignore it. Because you subscribe to a newsletter or whatever, that's where you lose me.
Yeah,
I want to stick in college football, and I saw this. They did a survey. A stadium website did a survey. 88% of FBS ADs want an expanded college football playoff when the current deal ends in 2025, 2026.
How about that overwhelming majority?
72% want an 8-team, 11%. This was much higher than I thought. 11% want a 16-team playoff.
Let's go, baby. Keep going big.
And right now, the favorite 8-team model is basically what we've talked about for 2 years now. Power 5 champions, one group of five, two at-larges. 80 slightly favor playing quarterfinals on campus.
Which I think would be a great idea as well. I think rewarding the top four seeds with home field advantage would be awesome. You would get all sorts of cool matchups and opportunities for fans to see teams coming to stadiums that you just don't often get. I would be all for that. The only thing you would hurt is some of the other New Year's Six bowl games, so I don't know how realistic it is, because if you go to an expanded playoff, those teams are still going to want good games. And if you're taking the top eight teams, technically you're going to have some conference champs, so maybe not all top eight, but most of the teams in the top 10 are now out of your pool to play in a New Year's Six bowl game. Those bowl games might be pissed and say, what are we spending money for? We want those matchups in our stadiums. It makes me chuckle when you see stuff like this, because this is just, it's common sense. It's common sense that this is good for college football, just like it was when we were kind of meandering through the BCS era. We could all agree this is a flawed system. You're deciding it by a computer. You have teams sometimes that are deserving of having a chance, but they had one stumble against a good team, but they can't get in because their conference wasn't as good enough. Like, this is dumb. Expand it. We went to the playoff, and now we've had issues over the last handful of years that have made people realize, you know what? You have four spots for a college football playoff, but there's five Power Five conferences. And what if you have a year where all five of them go undefeated and you got to leave an undefeated conference champion out of the picture? It doesn't make any sense. This is common sense. We should get there sooner rather than later. I don't want to wait until the end of the next TV deal. If they all want it now, why are we waiting until 2025 to implement this?
12% of the ADs that responded and they want an expanded playoff, they want the playoff to remain four teams. So you have more support for four teams than you do 16. But one Power 5 AD said this, quote, more and more fans are only concerned with the playoffs.
Yes.
That's sad, but true. So we should expand the playoffs when possible. Even if that impacts the bowl system, we have to figure out a way.
Yes.
End quote. And to that, I would say, you're right. And I've been saying this for a while now, like, people do not remember nor really care unless it's their team in these New Year's Day Six bowl games.
Unless it's your team or your conference, that's basically all that you remember.
Yeah, unless it's special to you, like, most of America is not going to remember Oregon, Wisconsin 3 years from now, 2 years from now.
Oh, Pac-12 fans, well, you remember Washington and Ohio State, you remember Washington and Penn State, like, you remember those kind of games, but outside of Pac-12 teams, there's not a lot of them that jump to the forefront of my mind.
But see, I think that statement... And that leaves me optimistic that eventually we could be looking at 16. And 16 would make a ton of sense.
I'd be all for it, man. Then you could get first-round matchups on home campuses a lot easier. But there's unintended consequences with ideas. And the biggest one of the college football playoff is that it has left the rest of the bowl games meaningless for a lot of people, to the point now where you have a lot of players that are sitting them out, not even playing them, even New Year's Six games. Like, you have a Fiesta Bowl some years where half of one team doesn't even want to show up because they're going to the NFL. And I can't blame the kids for that either, because you're just – I mean, it's a final game of your college career, but them making money and not risking getting hurt is far more important to them than finishing out their college career one final time. So that has been a major unintended consequence. And for the vast majority of people, bowl season is irrelevant to begin with, because a lot of those matchups are dumb, you know, bad teams that you don't even really care about watching. A couple of 6-6, mm-hmm. 7-5 teams. This has always been the way to reinvigorate the postseason of college football. And if you added more teams to the mix, there's so many benefits of more interest in the end of the season, more compelling matchups. And I think the biggest one of expanding it, look, I want to go further than 16, but I know that's not going to happen, but we'll just stick on the 16 number. It gives so many more programs a realistic shot of just making it. And I've used this analogy before for Oregon State and basketball. They went a long time without going in the NCAA tournament. It was a great program back in the day, a long dry spell. When they made the NCAA tournament a couple of years ago, even though they didn't win a game, what did that mean to Beaver fans? Just to be in it. Just to be in March Madness, and you're there, and it's the Thursday, and you see their team name in the bracket, and you fill it out, and you watch the game. They didn't end up winning it, but it meant so much to the fan base just to get there, and it created so much excitement. If you expanded to 16 in the college football playoff, there would be so many teams that would have a legitimate shot at actually making it, and what that would do for the fan bases, I think, would be tremendous.
Yeah, so a lot of – I mean, it's not shocking, I think, to get this kind of reaction from the athletic directors of all the programs, and I think it's frustrating to get that number. And for them to not maybe be pushing this hard, I don't care what your current TV deal. That's such a stupid cop out.
Yeah, we're in it till 2024.
People change their TV deals and the time frame of all that. They do it all the time.
You don't think ESPN would be willing to pay for four more playoff games?
Absolutely, they would.
Right,
they'd
sure.
probably pay more money too. Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you're going to expand the playoff to 8 to 12 to 6, whatever it ends up being, an expansion. This is just telling me it should happen tomorrow. What are we waiting another 5 years for? You're missing an opportunity to me to make more money.
You are.
You could bring games to campuses. You know, ticket sales there would be insane, whether from visiting or the home crowd. Airline prices, you know, tickets for airlines, hotel accommodations, restaurants locally. You would be getting so many more people moving around if you expanded this now instead of doing your generic four. And I guess I don't understand what they're waiting for here. Yeah. Again, do not give me TV deal ends in 2025. No. If they came to the networks to renegotiate, absolutely they could.
Right. They're not trying to get out of the deal. They're trying to enhance the deal.
And if you're telling me 88% of the people running this thing want this expanded now, what are you waiting 5 to 6 years for? I think you're just wasting time.
Do it now. We talked about this with baseball. I think it was last week with the whole expansion note. And are they looking to make more money? Are they looking to recoup some of the money they might lose this season by expanding sooner than we initially thought? This is an idea, though, I think, for college football. Of that, if the season doesn't go on as planned, or if they don't play till January, or if there's no fans in the stands and you're losing a big amount of your revenue, is this something that happens sooner because of the enhanced TV deal that you can make, because of the added revenue that it's going to bring to the conferences, that people will be more willing to do this sooner rather than later because you could end up losing a lot of money in the short term?
All right, we'll read your thoughts on the fan text line at 55305, and also the end of an era, but I would argue it ended long ago. That's next on the Fan. Oh, hello. Hope you enjoyed your minute 30 break there.
We're back.
We are back. You take out the promos and it's like a 20-second break. All right. Thoughts at the fan text line, expanding the college football playoff. I just don't think the support is going to continue to be there for another 5 years.
No,
I mean,
do you really think
that they're going to wait
if
5 years?
Was it 88% of ADs? 88%
of the ADs wanted to expand now.
That's overwhelming. The only thing that you need to decipher is what to do with the group of five question. And I'm in reading that article before the show as well. That was the only thing that there was kind of some back and forth on. Most people seem to think we need to expand the playoff. It should at least be eight, a smaller number in favor of 16, but you're at least starting with eight. The bigger question is, how do you involve a group of five team if you want to involve a group of five team? Because there's a split amongst athletic directors. Some want there to be an automatic bid for a group of five team to get in, and others don't want that to be the case. They would basically argue if you go undefeated, you're going to be in the top eight likely at the end of the season, so you'll get in. Mm-hmm. But to have an automatic spot taken away from potentially a two-loss, you know, non-conference champion Power 5 team, they don't like the way that looks. And I tend to agree with that line of thinking. I would love to have a group of five team get a shot. I think that's something we love about the NCAA tournament. You get a David versus Goliath kind of story, and you get a small team that gets a chance to knock off Duke in the NCAA tournament. I would love for that to be the case with college football. I'm scared about the guaranteed spot in an 18 playoff, because there's a lot of years where you have six or seven easy Power 5 teams that you would love to see go play a playoff, and you don't want to take away from a deserving Power 5 school.
Yeah, I mean, you want to put the group of five in there with the other Power 5 teams, whether you're doing 6, 8, 12, 16, doesn't, if you can figure that out, you go to 8, let's say, and you want one at large for a group of five, then go ahead and do that. But I'll tell you right now, the group of five better be playing the number one seed in that tournament every single year.
Well, and I think too,
there is no wiggle room for me. I don't care about UCF's winning streak. I don't care about Boise State and what they've done.
Right.
I want that team every year to have to play the Clemson, LSU, Alabama, Ohio States of the world.
Yeah, go face the champ.
In their first game every year, because quite frankly, your schedule compared to every other team that's involved in this, including the non-champion teams, they're Power 5 teams. And I give them that respect. You played a tougher conference. You played harder football. Largely, you get these group of five teams, and they have great runs, historic runs. Boise State was awesome. UCF had a good run. You get those kind of teams that will pop up in it, Cincinnati or something.
Mm-hmm. Remember UConn randomly was good
UConn
for like 2 years.
It's great to have those teams once in a while. But I'm also like, well, how great would they have really been if they were playing in a Power 5 conference the entire season?
Right.
I don't know if they're undefeated or if they even get through with one loss. And so if they want to be in it, fine. Let them in. I'm cool with that. But I want them to be the 16 seed. I want them to be the 8 seed. I want them slotted dead last and have to play the hardest team.
Well, I also think, too, if you're going to go the group of five route, that there need to be parameters put in place about how they get in. It can't just be the best group of five team at the end of the year gets in. I think there need to be parameters on what your win-loss record is, because if the best group of five team is 10-2 that year, I'm sorry, you don't deserve to go to the college football playoff. And also, there need to be parameters put in place of who your non-conference schedule is. Because if you're playing a weak non-conference schedule and then rattling through a weak conference, you also don't deserve to get in. You need to challenge yourself. Like, mm-hmm. Boise State was a great program for a long time. They still are a really good program. But when they were at their peak under Chris Peterson, the one thing that you would always say about them is they took on challenges. They played Virginia Tech. They played Georgia. Hell, they beat Oregon twice. Like, they played Pac-12 schools.
Yes, they did.
They always scheduled tough at the start of the year and often would go win that one game. And you just think, God, here comes Boise State again.
And they'd beat Oklahoma in a bowl game.
Right, and then they'd win a bowl game. So they challenge themselves to get there. And I think that's one thing. If you want to be in the mix, that's fine. But you got to make group of five schools think, okay, we think we can be up there with the big boys. We think we can play in a playoff. We need to schedule tough in the non-conference. We can't skate through 12 games and then a weak conference championship game and say, here's our automatic bid. Look at us. We're in the playoff.
Yeah, so 88% of ADs that were surveyed said they want to change things now.
Well, and look, I've been advocating for this a long time. One of our P1s, Tyler, he always tweets us every time this comes up, and he hates the idea of expanding the playoff. And he tweeted, I don't understand how you guys can argue for an expanded playoff and then turn right around and rail on participation trophies. This is precisely what you were advocating for. Expanding the playoff ruins the importance of the best regular season that we have. And I hate that thinking. I hate it. The participation trophy thing, if you want to try and argue that, that's fine. But acting like expanding the playoff ruins the regular season is completely false and wrong. We argued this, and people argued against the playoff when we had a BCS format. They said, if you expand to four, it's going to ruin the regular season. Every game's not going to mean as much. That's not the case. Do we still love college football during the regular season? Does it still mean a lot? If you go to eight, it is going to not...
I would argue, actually, it makes it worse with four.
Well,
because I do not believe that if a team loses a game, they shouldn't be qualified as right. a potential playoff right. team. I think that's a ridiculous stance.
The format that we have right now, it rewards teams for not scheduling tough in non-conference. Oregon is a great example of this. If Oregon doesn't schedule Auburn last year in the non-conference, they play Portland State instead, and then their only trip up is at Arizona State late in the year, they're likely in the college football playoff. They were penalized for playing a team. What did Auburn end up going? 9-3 last year, I think.
9-3.
It's a good SEC team. Not dominant, but a really good SEC team. They controlled some of it, ended up losing at the end. They were punished by that. Whereas other teams like Washington, when they made the playoff a couple of years ago, they scheduled nobody in non-conference. They tripped up late in the season against USC. They won the conference title in dominant fashion, and they ended up going to the playoff. Is that the system that we want to reward? I hate that way of thinking. If you had five guaranteed spots for conference champs and three at-larges, it keeps you roped into every game still because you have to win your conference championship just to get into the playoff, but it also keeps you invested as a fan that you could schedule that game against Ohio State or Michigan or Alabama and lose early in the season and not have this thought of, well, great, now we got to win 11 straight to make the college football playoff.
And that's where the Ducks were yet last year.
That's a dumb format to say if you schedule tough and you lose early, you then have to rattle off wins the rest of the season if you even want to have a chance at making it.
Well, I'd be curious if the people like Tyler who are against expansion, do they prefer the BCS model where you, I don't know, if it's a computer algorithm, if it's coaches or ADs or whatever, voting on just two. Is that what you would prefer? It would be my question to people like Tyler, because I think there is some pushback against expansion. But on the whole, it ruins the regular season argument.
We love football, man. We're still going to watch college football.
I disagree with the notion because the NFL actually is the perfect season. The NFL yes. has the perfect everything. It's a great year. It extends to the perfect time. Mm-hmm. The playoff is perfect. Well, playoff was perfect, and now they've ruined that.
They're adding an extra team, yeah.
But I thought the NFL had it great. And the reason I think that is because I'm okay watching really great teams have some hiccups. It's part of what football is, right? Yes. It's why people won't immediately dismiss an opponent, even if it seems obvious that you should. You know, Wyoming versus Oregon and Laramie.
Right.
I never bought that Wyoming was going to beat Oregon, not one time. Well, Josh Allen, I don't care.
Right.
But it's football, and weird things can happen, and the ball can bounce weird, and one guy can have a kick return, and suddenly the game doesn't go how you think. That happens all the time. That is kind of the beauty of football. It's kind of unpredictable, and as cliche as it is, you got to line up a hat on a hat, and you got to go see who the better man is.
Right.
And that's what I've always appreciated about football. And if you tell me Alabama or Ohio State or whoever are these great teams, they have a hiccup or two, I don't suddenly go, well, Alabama sucks. I can have an argument for why I didn't think Alabama should have been in the playoff over other teams with just four spots. But if you expand that to eight, I don't really have a follow-up argument to that. It's Ala-freaking-Bama. Right. They had a couple hiccups. I don't think it diminishes it. I think you still have the same enthusiasm that you would going into a Saturday matchup. Washington and Oregon, if they each had a loss, generally we would say, well, here you go.
Yeah, let's say next year the season goes on as planned. Michigan beats Washington and Ohio State beats Oregon. They both lose that non-conference game.
Traditionally, we would say, well, now you have to go 11-1 to have a chance, whereas maybe there'd be an opportunity for both. Even if one of them couldn't get to the Pac-12 title game, we know that the criteria to even be in the championship game doesn't matter because Alabama did it a couple years back. So
Maybe you lose that game close, but you're 10-2 at the end of the season and you have a chance at an at-large bid.
I don't think it diminishes it because we love it and we're connected with these programs for not even football reasons. Like your connection to Oregon, dude, it is much deeper than just football. It's friendships. It's 4 to 5 years of your life in a city. That's why for me, Oregon State, it's not really about football. Like, football's great, and I root for the Beavs. But mine is about meeting my wife. Mm-hmm. It's about having experiences I never thought I would. It's about living on my own in a city an hour and a half away I've never been.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, having that is what ties you to programs. I don't think you lose any of that luster.
Yeah, you're still going to love it. You're still going to watch it.
If anything, it leaves you encouraged that your team can stub their toe twice in a season and have still a shot at being in the dance. And just like the NCAA tournament, if you can get in the dance,
it's a big deal, man.
You just want that chance. And if your team gets pummeled, then so be it. But if they have an upset, you're not going to go back and go, you know, it really sucks they made it in with 2 to 3 losses. Right. You're going to go, I'm glad that I felt like this team had this potential and they tapped into that. I think it actually opens it up.
College football playoff.
Yeah.
That's a pretty cool thing to say.
All right. We got a loaded second hour, a lot more to get to. Our sports question of the day today, which piece of sports memorabilia would you want to own? If you could buy one thing in sports memorabilia, what would you get? Price doesn't matter. We'll tell you why we asked this sports question of the day. Hour two straight ahead on The Fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend? Or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.